This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, as cleanup continues from the massive typhoon in the Philippines, we'll hear from a Western Michigan University geography professor on disaster relief. But first, West Michigan Congressman Justin Amash and the Republican Party. A recent article for Mother Jones magazine describes Amash as a Star Trek-tweeting, Justin Bieber-quoting amateur arborist from Grand Rapids, who has emerged as an unlikely leader of the most serious rebellion against unchecked surveillance powers since 9/11. The same story says that Amash has also become a driving force in the fight for the future of the libertarian movement. Mother Jones reporter Tim Murphy wrote the article that bears the title, "Will GOP Rebel Justin Amash Bring Down the NSA and His Own Party?" Tim Murphy, thank you very much for taking some time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me.
Why did you write this article? Why was Justin Amash a source of interest to you and the editors at Mother Jones?
Well, Justin Amash really came onto our radar screen because of what he's not. You know, he's not this traditional Republican, white-haired, you know, Bible-thumping, you know, kind of tough on national security kind of caricature that we've come to kind of appreciate over the last, say, a decade and a half. He's a total break from his party in so many different respects, starting with his age. He's 33. His interest, you know, he's into video games and, you know, making fun of, you know, pop culture icons on Twitter. His ethnicity, he's half Palestinian and half Syrian. And, of course, his politics. He represents a thorn in the side of his party's leadership on so many different issues. And I think we saw that really come to a head earlier this year.
So within his own party, if we talk about that libertarian Ron Paul, Rand Paul wing of the GOP, is it fair to say that Justin Amash is something of a rock star?
He absolutely is. You know, the story that I wrote leads off with him at this event in Virginia for a group called the Young Americans for Liberty, which is an offshoot of that original Ron Paul revolution. And Justin shows up, and immediately his name is chanted. Somebody shouts out, you know, the man who wants to save the 14th Amendment. He is not maybe as much as the original Ron Paul, but he is quickly becoming, you know, on that first-name basis with a lot of these activists, and especially in part because of his age.
So then we also have the establishment of the Republican Party. Now, John McCain, who at one time was called a maverick, he has very little good to say about Justin Amash, doesn't he?
He really doesn't. John McCain's term for Amash and some of those members of that cohort on national security is wacko bird. I think Justin Amash should counter by saying that McCain is something of an angry bird. But that all boils down to that huge disagreement on national security. Amash, of course, was the sponsor of the Amash Amendment, which was designed to curtail the surveillance powers of the National Security Agency. McCain, who is a fairly vocal voice for foreign intervention, you know, domestic surveillance, and those kinds of issues, really takes that quite seriously.
In this day and age of hyper-partisanship, polarized issues between Republicans and Democrats, how did Justin Amash manage to build a coalition of Republicans and Democrats, and as your article says, split pretty evenly between the parties, on this amendment to limit data collection by the National Security Agency?
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because traditionally in D.C., the way you go about building these coalitions is that everybody kind of moves to the center. And so your deal makers are folks like, you know, Joe Lieberman or Joe Manchin or John Breaux or folks like that. And Amash is really not in the center of his party. He's kind of way out on, you know, doing his own thing on some wing. But he's decided, instead of doing that, he's going to kind of take folks who are on those ends of the parties but have, you know, mutual, you know, aversion to, you know, warrantless wiretapping or you know, metadata collection or that kind of thing. So he hasn't really compromised on his core issues, but he's discovered that, you know, a lot of his Democratic colleagues who he wouldn't really work with on any other issue do come over to his side. And, you know, he's pretty frank about it.
And in the case of that NSA amendment, one of the people he worked with was John Conyers from Detroit, a very liberal congressman. Does this maybe make the case that the political spectrum is really almost an oval where left and right eventually meet on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of looking at it. And another way is that we've been focusing on a lot of issues, for instance, entitlement spending or something like that, where obviously Congressman Conyers and Congressman Amash would really have no semblance of a middle ground. But when you move the conversation away to other very important issues that don't get as much play in the halls of Congress, then then there's much more of an opportunity for these kinds of deals, and Amash really has a nose for that.
So despite his outreach to Democrats on this narrow band of issues and the disdain that he does invoke from some Republicans, would you still say that Justin Amash has pretty solid credentials as a conservative?
He does, and it sort of depends on who you talk to about that. He's currently being challenged by a fairly well-funded businessman from Grand Rapids in the Republican primary, and they've lined up another kind of a host of other businessmen to bankroll that campaign. But if you talk to folks like the Ron Paul conservatives, who consider themselves to be the true conservatives, you know, his record is impeccable on things like tax cuts, on things like abortion. It's kind of when you get down to these issues where the Republican Party is really divided that you get kind of a pushback.
Now, Congress has long been known as a place where you have to build seniority in order to get power. But Justin Amash is only in his second term. And you quote Representative Gerald Polis, a Colorado Democrat, as saying that there are committee chairmen that fear Justin Amash. How has Justin Amash managed to climb the ladder so quickly?
Yeah, traditionally, if you're a first term or a second term, or you could wait around for a decade and you're a member of Congress, you're going to be really frustrated because no one really listens to you. Amash has succeeded in a couple of ways. The first is that he doesn't really care about the leadership, and he doesn't really have any ambition to be in the leadership or make friends or anything like that. And so that's allowed him a lot more flexibility ideologically, and it allowed him more flexibility in terms of, you know, the legislation that he pursues. The second is that he's just worked really hard at it. He will sit down and you know, call up and have his staff call up every office in Congress to see if they want to meet, talk about a particular bill. For instance, he proposed an alternative budget to the one proposed by his party's, you know, elder statesman, Congressman Paul Ryan. And it really had no chance of passing, but he did sit down with about 100 members of Congress to go over it in kind of a PowerPoint-style presentation. So he's sort of made of it what he can and just skipped the traditional, you know, seniority process.
But as you note in your article, there has been a price with this, being stripped of committee assignments and some other things for what has been called a lack of party discipline. Does any of that bother Justin Amash?
It doesn't. Initially, it did. He was stripped of his spot on the budget committee, which is a very prestigious committee, because of what he did with the Paul Ryan budget. And, of course, he went on Facebook afterwards and explained why he thought the Paul Ryan budget was bad, which his party leadership did not appreciate. He was upset about that at the time, but now I think the backlash that he got from the leadership on that, and then the backlash the leadership got from that, ultimately empowered him and kind of, you know, bolstered his cred as someone who's going to work outside of that traditional Washington process. I think he would say that it has made him more powerful than if he had gone at the conventional route.
As you noted, one of the things that makes Justin Amash stand out in Congress, especially amongst the Republican Party, is his age. He's only 33. Does that perhaps steer some of his thinking and some of his voting patterns, that he is relatively young compared to other members of Congress?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes him a lot more aware. You know, the average member of Congress is, you know, balding or at least getting gray-haired. And he is very tech-savvy. You know, those libertarian, you know, supporters that he has made his base are, as a rule, very tech-savvy. And so that gives him a greater awareness of, you know, what exactly is going on with the NSA and what that actually means for you as an individual in terms of your privacy and your metadata and that kind of thing. He just speaks the language a little bit better. But it also means that on a lot of issues where Republicans have traditionally taken heat, he is just part of a different generation. So he is, you know, personally opposed to gay marriage, but he's not going to go out on the campaign trail and make that a huge issue. He's just able to communicate with the younger generation a lot better.
One social issue where he does line up maybe a little better with the base of his party is abortion. As a libertarian, how does he square the idea that government should be out of your life and yet that abortion should be illegal?
Well, he uses the 14th Amendment to make that claim, so that kind of is consistent with that whole, you know, constitutionalist Ron Paul philosophy. He argues that if you were to terminate the fetus, you'd be violating his 14th Amendment right. So that's how he squares it. It's not an issue of one woman making up what to do with her body. It's an issue of two people. And that is seeing clashing with a lot of, for instance, the folks that he's worked with, libertarian-minded progressives, for instance, on national security issues. That's a huge divide, and I think it was obviously one reason why he would never run for president, but I also don't think he would stand much of a shot at winning re-election in that conservative Western Michigan district if he had a different view on that.
Quoting from your article again, the most immediate thing that stands out about Amash is that for someone who never misses a vote and uses Facebook to report on each one he takes, that's some 2,000 and counting, he spends an inordinate amount of time trolling people on the internet. That includes, of course, the aforementioned Senator from Arizona, John McCain, as well as Justin Bieber. Why does he troll these people, and how does he pick his targets?
Well, I think, you know, the same could be said for pretty much anyone who is Justin Amash's age or perhaps my age on Twitter. Is I think it's just, you know, something that he finds kind of fun to, you know, get a rise out of people or just kind of make a joke. But it also, in kind of a more serious way, is a really effective way for him to communicate with his followers and to get his message out. During the NSA debate, that was something that came up, was that he was using his very significant social media following to push the issue and to kind of draw attention to the fact that, you know, Speaker of the House John Boehner was not willing to let this stuff come up for a vote. And ultimately, it kind of caught this critical mass of support, you know, on the social networks, and that kind of translates into other media as well. And Boehner sort of felt like he had no choice except to, unless to risk some sort of rebellion, and he did put it up for a vote.
Now, you end your article with a quote from someone from Ionia, who again was at this town hall meeting, and says there's just one problem with Justin Amash, is that he's still too young to be president. Again, he's 33, and you have to be at least 35. Putting aside whether or not he's ever going to run for president, as you said before, that's probably not likely. But what is his political future? He decided not to run for U.S. Senate in Michigan. Any sense of where he sees this all going 10 or 15 years down the road?
He's coming up with a very tough re-election fight with the primary that I mentioned earlier, but he also is very well positioned to survive that. He has very deep financial backing in the form of, for instance, the DeVos family of Grand Rapids. He's got the support of groups like the Club for Growth, and he's got this very deep network of supporters who kind of came out of the woodwork during the multiple Ron Paul presidential campaigns. And if he can survive that, he can pretty much survive anything. It's a very safe Republican district where the only challenges would really come for the primary, and he might even be able to stick around long enough to build up that seniority again. So I think he is looking forward to a long and, in his view, successful career in the House of Representatives. The, you know, open Senate seats and contested races in Michigan don't come around very often, and I think he eyeballed this one and perhaps rightly thought that it was not his race to win.
Is the tricky part perhaps for him in a Republican primary in that district that Grand Rapids has long been thought of as more of a Main Street Republican, Republican establishment type area, and he doesn't really represent that. Is that where the danger could be for him in a primary next year?
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially the argument, and that this is the district of Gerald Ford and Bernd Ehlers. But I think he's counting on the fact that, you know, for instance, young people in Grand Rapids would be more inclined based on kind of a variety of issues to come on board. And of course, you know, traveling the district, and I traveled the district with him for a few days, and, you know, there was kind of wide support for what he had done on the National Security Agency. And partly that's because people are concerned about civil liberties, and partly that's because he's taking on President Obama in a way that a lot of other folks have been shy to do. So I think, you know, it should be a tough race for him, but he does have base of support and the resources pulled out.
Of course, when Justin Amash's name comes up, the names of former congressman, now retired Ron Paul, and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul also get mentioned quite frequently. Is he the kind of logical heir to what they have done? And as you know, it's said in your article, perhaps he can be more effective than Ron Paul or Rand Paul in pushing these ideas. Why would people see him as more effective than those two?
Yeah, the sort of Ron Paul political family tree is a little fuzzier than it might immediately seem. You know, there's some overlap, and obviously they work together a lot between Congressman Amash and you know, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Mike Lee. and a number of mostly newly elected folks in the House. What Amash stands to benefit from is, in part because of his age and in part because he's not related to Ron Paul, is he doesn't have a lot of the skeletons in his closet that the Pauls do. Ron Paul, of course, was hindered in his ability to reach out to people that really were naturally inclined to like him because of racist newsletters that were written under his name. Senator Rand Paul had no part in that, but he's had a kind of a succession of spokesmen and communications directors who have, you know, been affiliated with, for instance, having an annual party to celebrate John Wilkes Booth. That kind of thing just turns people away, and Justin Amash doesn't have that kind of baggage. And he's also, you know, if you talk to national security folks in D.C., been a lot more serious in the kinds of proposals that he's put forward. The National Security Agency amendment that he put forward, you know, was very carefully drafted, and it had a very serious chance of going through. It came just a few votes short because of opposition from the White House. Rand Paul's biggest accomplishment was the filibuster, which was symbolic in getting attention toward the issue of drone strikes, but didn't actually fundamentally alter or stand fundamentally alter anything about American policy.
A lot of people quoted in your article say that Justin Amash shows you can stick to your principles and you can still get things done. Is that maybe selling him a little bit short? Is he a little more politically savvy than people are saying, perhaps, when they just say that he's sticking to his principles?
I think there's a little bit of both. He's obviously smart enough to, you know how to reach out to people and to pick his spot. He's not introducing a new bill to do, you know, the same thing every day until people finally hear him. He's building a coalition and that kind of thing. But there is some Washington savvy to it. And I think there's also kind of a recognition that on some of the issues that he really supports, he's not going to get anything accomplished. I don't think we're going to undo our entire Federal Reserve system just because Justin Amash doesn't support it. But, you know, I think on some of these core issues, he's succeeded by standing by those issues rather than, you know, ducking toward a more conventional party line.
Tim Murphy, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Reporter Tim Murphy's article on Justin Amash for Mother Jones Magazine is called "Will GOP Rebel Justin Amash Bring Down the NSA and His Own Party?" You can find a link to that story at our website, WMUK.org.